Top headlines.
A 3-1 win in Toronto last night for Bruce Cassidy and the Bruins, who now lead the best of seven, 3-1. Let's see what Bruce Cassidy had to say about the game early on. Things were tied up for a while. Coach?
You know, we're talking about that. We watched games last night, right? So you're watching Tampa Bay and you see the goaltending performance there. You watch Winnipeg. So on the road, you're going to need a little extra at some point, especially against a team that was down a couple in our building. So we got it. We got it. And you know, we needed it because early on they were better.
Mm. Now, as far as Patrice Bergeron, he was a late scratch yesterday, upper body injury. He skated at Warrior this morning. Coach Bruce Cassidy said just a few minutes ago, doesn't know whether he's going to play tomorrow night or not. That could be the decisive one. And the elimination game for the Maple Leafs, game 5 at the TD Garden, puck drops just after 8 o'clock. Tonight, the Celtics play there in Milwaukee with a chance to go up 3-0 on the Bucks. We'll get the latest from Sean Grandy and Cedric Maxwell, starting with the pregame at 9 o'clock here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. We can tell you right now that Bucks center John Henson is doubtful with back soreness. Red Sox completed the sweep of the Angels in Anaheim, won those 3 games by a total of 27-3 after last night's 8-2 win. They'll continue the road trip tonight in Oakland with the first of 3. Drew Pomerantz gets the start. Headlines are brought to you by Carrier. Turn to the experts for cooling season at Carrier.com. I'm Hardy on Boston's home for sports, 98.5 The Sports Hub. More headlines in 30 minutes.
Boston, the greatest sports city in the world. Period. And this is Boston's home for the Bruins, Celtics, Patriots, and Revolution. Boston's home for sports. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Now.
Sports talk. While you're on the clock. This is Zolak and Bertrand.
We're sports show radio hosts.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Josie's on a vacation far away. Come around and talk it over. So many things that I want to say. You know I like my girls a little bit older. I just want to use your love tonight.
Time on this Friday here on Zolak and Bertrand. We are remembering Gil Santos today, legendary Patriots broadcaster, and also talking about last night's big win for the Bruins. Rob is in the truck, wanted to talk some hockey today. Hey, Rob.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Love the show.
Thank you.
Real quickly, thoughts and prayers to Gil's family and friends. A lot of memories in my life tied to New England sports, and he's right there with them. I'm the biggest Tuukka hater you'll ever meet. Nah. I even got to take my hat off to him last night. Uh-huh. Stood on his head.
Nice. Now, there's a reasonable man.
There you go.
You got to give credit where credit's due. He needed to steal one, and he did. But what I wanted to ask you guys, I know you watch a lot, have you noticed what seems to be just a real good chemistry starting to build between Jake DeBrusk and Rick Nash? Just your thoughts on that. I thought they both had phenomenal games all the games they played against Toronto so far.
Okay, I mean, we talked about this yesterday, too, even with Billy Jaffe when he was in. The Nash part of it came out like a force in game one. Sort of was still kind of that guy in game two. Game three took the dip, was better again last night. Fair to say, like, through the 4 games. He came out flying like gangbusters. He was out for a while, and we're all wondering how the hell he was going to be.
Yeah, I thought he bounced back a little bit last night, but
last night everybody did.
I don't think games 2 and 3 were great for him.
2, it started to trend downward. 3 was his worst. Games 1 and 4, I thought, were his best. But how about, you know, we haven't even mentioned
Krejci. So we talked about Jake DeBrusk, right? We talked about Jake DeBrusk and his goal last night and the finish and the beautiful touch.
How'd he get that?
Obviously, that's work that was done by David Krejci, who just put in work and whose minutes and ice time were down last night in that game. Rick Nash hasn't had the finish that a guy like Jake DeBrusk has had. That's the point that Jim Louth made to me last night as I was saying, oh, come on, that's all Krejci.
Yeah.
That's all. Look at all the work Krejci puts in to make this goal happen. So it's like, well, you got DeBrusk with a nice finish. I don't see any other guys doing that. I don't see Rick Nash doing that right now.
Or old man back is old man Nash. They can't finish.
Keywords old.
Not. Yeah. I mean, they can. We know they're capable of it, but they have not. And this knock on Rick Nash about Rick Nash in the playoffs will continue without the production. Hasn't been there.
Yeah.
Like Horford is good without the scoring.
He does all the
little,
little things
well. He's good on the dot. Too. He's good on special teams. Everything. Yeah, he does all that stuff well. He's good in the boards. Yeah.
Andy is in Hanover with an NFL thought. Hey, Andy.
What's going on, guys?
Hi, Andy.
My favorite part of the show is, and I think you guys in the studio are immune to it, but you'll be talking about Terry Rozier or Torrey Krug or something, and Zoe will just have like a micro seizure and say something like, Sosie in Guadalajara. That's what I listen for.
I love you. I am so glad that those little moments that I try and add some levity to a really deep sports discussion on a sports show in the midday, you kind of just, hey, if you're paying attention out there, I'm going to throw a zinger. They're like, look at that guy on TV. Or that monkey. Remember, hey, I don't know.
In my old age, I'm going to comb through
hours
and days and just put together a great compilation for you.
I appreciate that so much because it means something to me because it actually translates. I don't know if you remember, but about 3 weeks ago.
Let's give him an example right now. Why don't you just throw something in?
You guys were doing something about the Red Sox, blah, 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 around opening day.
You know, earlier we were talking about Torrey Krug's goal last night. Yeah. Somebody said
right
something
the gate,
to the
confidence.
Effect of, like, puck luck. I'm like, no, there's a really good screen in front of the net there. And I don't think that's as much luck as it is just really good positioning.
Did you guys see that the baboon smoking a cigarette?
There it is.
Remember the baboon? There it is. Remember the baboon was hitting the drag and he kept, like, putting it out? There was a video that went viral.
I think it was
about
India, and they were all upset about the baboon was smoking the cigarette.
And it popped up on me, and then he had that 8-year-old little kid, that fat kid, was smoking butts at some other country.
Okay.
And the dad's passing a kid cigarettes.
But
I'm like,
Krug's goal.
No,
what about Krug's goal and the confidence out of the game?
Yeah.
Andy, what else did you have?
Well, I was just going to say, you know, radio is a very complex concept.
It's a long day, sir.
You guys have some great layers. That micro seizure of Zoe is just a fabulous layer. But just on the Torrey
it's sneaky
Krug
good.
Point, as good as nice suck. As it was to get a little offense out of Krug, I think going forward, Bruins really have to address his defense. He let off a few times last night where the Leafs, he created turnovers for the Leafs, almost walked down and had an open shot on Tuukka, and that's kind of scary. I hope that's addressed. But what I was going to say about the NFL draft, my one question for Zoe is, and sorry if this is a bit of a tangent, but I don't see why the Browns don't take Saquon number one. If you take a quarterback, you know, he's not going to be their number four. Their guy still might be their number four. You think they move out of it? You think there's a chance they take him one? Well, what are your thoughts on that?
I think they take Josh Allen, and I understand what you're saying there, but you know, you look at some of these running backs that are taking number one overall. You got to have a guy pulls the trigger, and if you think you got a franchise guy, whether it's Allen, Darnold, or Rosen, you take that guy, regardless of how you picked in the past. Cleveland's had a history of picking the wrong quarterback.
Yes, lengthy history.
See Johnny Manziel. See Tim Couch.
Tim Couch starts
keep going.
Starts right around Tim Couch.
Brady Quinn, right?
Brutal.
Oh,
but here's the deal, though. You don't have anything until you have the quarterback.
So don't draft
a running back. Don't take him.
You're going to have Franco Harris sitting there. You're not taking him.
You're not going to win because you have a great running back and only a great running back. You can't build a winner until you have the quarterback.
Right.
So as stupid as it seems, because Cleveland has screwed this up so many times, you just keep going back to that well. Keep fishing out more and more quarterbacks until you get it right. It's what you have to do.
I like Barkley as a player. You got to have a guy. You got to have a guy in front of him. I think he's a perfect fit for the Giants with an old quarterback.
It seems like he's going to the Giants.
It does. It really does.
I asked you if you saw that picture. He's in a barbershop the other day wearing a Giants sweatshirt, and someone's snapping photos of him without him knowing.
You know he represents him too, right?
Yeah, he's got Rock Nation.
Jay-Z.
And I read a story the other day that said they don't want him in Cleveland.
That does nothing for them in Cleveland.
I think he did a cover story for SI this week where he's saying he believes he should be the number one pick. And then secretly his reps are saying, yeah, but we don't want him to go number one because it's Cleveland.
I don't think Jay-Z ever even did a concert in Cleveland.
Yeah, I don't think he wants to go to Cleveland.
Yeah, no.
Well, you know, it's not so much Cleveland against the city as it is their wretched football team. Bad forever. 617-779-0985. As promised, when we come back after this break, if you didn't hear it the first time around, even if you did hear it the first time around and want to hear it again, like we do, we pay tribute to Gil Santos in his own words and with some of his best calls. That's next.
It's the joy of the hot dog.
Boom. Like, I win. Like, yeah.
But he has the ability to get skinny in a hole.
I know. I want to get it out.
Highly underrated piece of meat.
Beetle and Zell.
Sports Hub host for the most.
98.5. Sports Hub.
It's meant to me the fulfillment of a lifelong dream.
When I was 10, 11 years old, that's when I decided I wanted to be a radio announcer.
Rogan ball signal. Rogan goes back to pass. Rogan has time. He fires. Complete the pass at 20, 15, 10, 5, and he's in. He's in for touchdown.
I remember listening to the Rose Bowl game on January 1st at home in Fairhaven. It was cold. It was snowing. And Mel Allen was doing the Rose Bowl. And from then on, that was what I focused on. My life was a lifelong dream was to be a play-by-play man.
Stabler is back to pass. Here comes the rush again. He gets it away, and it is incomplete at the 5-yard line. A penalty marker is down, roughing the passer. First down, Oakland, with 52 seconds left.
When I was a kid, I didn't learn to speak English until just before I went to the first grade. Because my grandfather lived with us, and he didn't speak English, so in the house we spoke Portuguese. So they taught me to speak English just before I went to the first grade, and I find it ironic that 60-some-odd years later, I'm going into the Patriots Hall of Fame for my ability to speak English.
Bledsoe back to throw. Looks, floats to the end zone. Touchdown, the Patriots win to Kevin Turner! Drew Bledsoe's third touchdown pass of the game in overtime to Kevin Turner, and the Patriots come back from a 20-0 deficit.
Let me assure you, it was never a job.
At midfield, all I got to do is tackle him. The ball game is over. The Patriots win. They have won the Eastern Division.
It was an honor. It was a privilege. And I'm delighted to have been able to do it for all that time.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It's the American Football Conference championship game between the Cinderella New England Patriots and the big bad Pittsburgh Steelers. I'm happy to report that despite all the prognostications of doom, the Patriots have shown up here today and will take the field against the Steelers.
You know, you try to be as objective as possible, but on the other hand, I never wanted to leave any doubt in anybody's mind that I wanted the Patriots to win. In my heart, I'm rooting for the Patriots, and I want that to come across. And I think it does.
45-yard field goal attempt coming up. Snap, ball down. Kick up on the way, and it is good!
After that game, that week, I was being interviewed on some radio station. The guy said, was that the highlight of your broadcast career up to this point? And I said, yes, absolutely. Did you ever think you can top that? And I said, only if we win the Super Bowl in a couple of weeks on the last play of the game. And don't you know it?
Oh, wow.
We win the Super Bowl on the last play of the game.
From the far hash mark, angle to the left for Adam Vinatieri. 48-yard field goal attempt. Set to go. Snap, ball down. Kick up. Kick is on the way. And it is good! It's good! Eight-yard field goal, and the game is over, and the Patriots are Super Bowl champions! The Patriots are Super Bowl champions! The best team in the National Football League!
Then you hug Gino, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yep. We both kind of just sat there and said, my God, you know, our team just won the Super Bowl.
Oh, baby! Oh, oh, what a finish! What a finish to Camille! Oh, my God!
Today, quite frankly, is the high point of my broadcast career of more than 50 years. To be selected to the Patriots Hall of Fame.
Touchdown, Patriots! Tom Brady Randy Moss, and they each have set NFL records on the go-ahead touchdown.
Thank you for appreciating my work.
Back-to-back World Championships, 3 out of 4. Yes, it's a dynasty.
Thank you for all the good things you've said about me.
16-0.
And for those of you who didn't like my work, can't please everybody all the time, despite the fact that you're wrong.
So the Patriots season has come to a close here in the AFC Championship game. And with it has come to a close my 36 years of broadcasting Patriots football. This is Gil Santos thanking you all for 36 wonderful years.
And the question was, can you sum up your life in 6 words? And I thought about that for 10 seconds, and I said, absolutely, I can sum up my life in 6 words. I am a very lucky man. Thank you. Thank you.
And the rest of us are lucky to have heard him on the radio or to have actually known him, Gil Santos. Our thoughts with his family, our condolences to his family and friends and colleagues today after he passed away yesterday at the age of 80 on the day that happened to be not only his birthday, but his wedding anniversary. This guy did a lot of stuff on April 19th. A lot of things going on that day for him.
Would have been a good Shaughnessy dates, Dan's dates. I mean, a lot of stuff Gil did on one day. I mean,
easy to remember.
Birthday, your death, your anniversary.
Yeah. Well, you don't need to remember the death.
Oh, I know.
He would tell you, but he would say, easy to remember your anniversary when it's your birthday. 617-779-0985. And as you heard earlier when we talked to Mark Santos, and as you've probably read, Gil had battled some health problems over the last few years, but every time, man, he had bounced back. He bounced back big because I remember him coming by and seeing us at training camp going back a couple of years.
He looked great.
He looked fabulous. And we were, you know, chit-chatting with him, and I remember, you know, you saying, Gil, how you feeling? And he looks at us and goes, guys, I feel great. He goes, I feel like I could call a game today. He said, but I can't see for bleep.
Brute honesty was the best.
Yeah. He said, if I could see, maybe I could do the game.
Yeah.
He said, but I feel great.
He used to get so, and this is when you know you're working with a really good one. He used to get so upset immediately when he would miss a name. And it would be like during a break or something, it would be the most aggressive outburst, or he'd slam a table. And he'd sit down and take a deep breath. He'd say, all right, moving on. It's like Brady after a pick. You don't sit there and you dwell on it. You end up throwing four more. Turn the page, move on. But damn it, I know I screwed that up. We'll address it after the game. I'm going to move and I'm going to do the rest of the game. And he would just phenomenal flow, anything he did or read.
Paul is in Newton today. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Mark and Scott. I enjoy both of your work very much.
Thank you.
I would just like to share a couple memories of Gil and the play-by-play man with whom he started, Bob Starr. They were hired in 1966. They were both young. Starr had come from Oklahoma, and Gil was from New Bedford. Starr went off to a great career, too. When he left Boston, he did both the football and baseball Cardinals for KMOX. Then he went to Los Angeles and did the Angels and the Rams. He did the Red Sox for a while in the 1990s. But their first game was in early August of 1966, against the Buffalo, who was the defending champions. And it was at Boston College, and it was a very hot day. And of course, Gil was doing the color. And Gil said, I'd like to compliment our fans for staying out here. It's a very hot day. You know, we're getting paid for it, but they're out, you know, here voluntarily. And Starr said back to him, who said you're getting paid? And Gil said, I was wondering how I got this job. But in 1970, Starr left for St. Louis, and in 71, Gil took over the play-by-play. And in 1980, Starr came back to Foxborough to announce the Rams game against the Patriots. He stayed to do a talk show that night, and the host said, it would be nice to have you and Gil together in the same room to be interviewed. And Starr said, they could never find a room big enough to fit both of our egos.
Good story, Paul. Appreciate it. We go to Mike, who's in Paxton. Hey, Mike.
Hey, guys. How's it going? Great show. Good job with the Gil tribute today.
That's Jim Loft.
Two quick memories about Gil. So everyone remembers the 03 or 04, you know, snow blizzard game against Miami for the Teddy Bruschi touchdown and everybody throwing snowballs in the air because the snow was still in the stands. I was supposed to be at that game. We're driving down 495, ready to get off Route 1, and Gil comes over the radio because we're listening to the pregame show and says, if you're not in the parking lot and not in the stadium, turn around because there's no more room for anyone to park. So we basically got off of 495 onto Route 1 and then did a loop and got back on 495 and drove home because there was no place to park, according to Gil. So that's one of my favorite Gil radio memories.
He was right, by the way. That was a good tip.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, no, it's perfectly right on. The guys I was with were disappointed, but that's, you know, besides the point. The other one is, so like everybody who was a season ticket holder at Foxborough Stadium, we all were greatly filled with anticipation when they were going to open Gillette. We would go over and, you know, look at the construction every time we went to the game. So that first preseason game in 02, and I don't know if it was Tampa or who it was that they played in that game, we got there super early so we could walk around the stadium and check it out and all that other stuff. So we were there, like, I don't want to say we were first in line, but we were pretty close. So we're walking around, and Zoe, you can confirm this, or Beto, you can too. I think the press box opens up in the back, the door to the concourse, right?
Yes, it does.
It does.
So we're walking around that side of the stadium, and I was a pretty big guy at the time, and Gil and Gino are walking towards us, and I think I yelled, like, hey, guys, or something like that, and I think I scared the crap out of them as they were walking towards me.
I believe that. Sure, I've done that a lot.
Yeah.
So that's my favorite Gil memory, walking by him at the stadium that first preseason game.
Kind of jumped out at him there.
It's funny, I told somebody this today. They said, who was Gil the most like? Like, if you had to pick somebody, or how could you describe Gil as a person? And I said, well, if you take Al Michaels and Walter Matthau and Grumpier Old Men, and you blend them together, because Al's the greatest play-by-play guy, he's the best. And add that Walter Matthau chippy edge to it, that crusty edge to it, that's Gil. That was Gil.
617-779-0985 is the telephone number. We've got time for a couple more here before we get to headlines. Joe's in New Hampshire. Hey, Joe.
Hey, guys. How's it going today?
How you doing?
I just wanted to pass on my condolences to the Santos family and to both of you. I remember listening to him call the first Super Bowl win. I thought I was going to be screaming, jumping up and down for joy, but I just couldn't do it. I couldn't move, speechless, and I loved hearing him talk. So my condolences to everybody.
All right, Joe, thanks for the call. Hardy has our headlines, 617-779-0985. We'll get back at it with some Bruins thoughts. Also, Red Sox continue on their tear. We will get into that as well. We've got everything from the week that you might want to discuss, 617-779-0985.
Sports Hub headlines.
Patrice Bergeron on the ice this morning for the Bruins after he was a late scratch right before last night's eventual 3-1 win over the Toronto Maple Leafs in Toronto, according to Coach Bruce Cassidy. I don't know if he's going to be able to play tomorrow night in what could be the final game of the series. Bruins now lead 3-1. Game 5 tomorrow night at the TD Garden. Puck drops just after 8 o'clock. For the Celtics, they've got a game 3 tonight and a chance to go up 3-0 against the Bucks. They're in Milwaukee, relatively late one for Boston folks, as the tip-off won't happen until right around 9:30. You'll hear the game, starting with the pregame at 9 p.m. with Sean Grandy and Cedric Maxwell right here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. John Henson of the Bucks is doubtful tonight due to back soreness. The Red Sox completed their sweep of the Angels in Anaheim with an 8-2 win in Game 3 last night. Another three-game set begins tonight against the A's in Oakland. Drew Pomeranz gets the start. Headlines are brought to you by Stormworks Roofing and Restoration. Now through the end of April, save up to $500 on a complete roofing system. Set up a free inspection at stormworksroofing.com or 844-STORMWORKS. I'm Hardy on Boston's home for sports. 98.5 The Sports Hub. More headlines in 30 minutes.
Making your job suck just a little bit less.
You think they have a big hole?
I think they have a big hole.
Zolak and Bertrand. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
And Marlowe denied point blank by Rask, who pushed across, stepped it with his right pad.
It was impressive to watch, but yeah, he's the least reason why I went today for sure, and he kept the game winnable.
Rask the save. Rebound right of the net. Rask, a terrific left toe save.
You know, he's one of the best goalies in the world.
And broken up, then lost his footing. Moore, right circle, shoots. Rask the save. Ever so calmly flipped up that left club and snapped it.
Every team needs goaltending, and there's the odd time, the odd night. You know, you're going to get away without it. But tonight we needed him to dig in and be very good anymore.
And here's Marner, speeds up into the slot, shoots, past the stop.
He's been big in every game. You know, he's keeping us in the game every single night, and he's been playing really well, so hopefully he can keep it up.
Sometimes when you play a team who's desperate, who needs to win, you know, you got to weather the storm, and I think today we did. We did it together, and at the end of the day, you know, we got the W, so that's great.
Great night for the Bruins last night. Taking the commanding 3-1 series lead, the biggest swing in pro sports, is that game 4. You either have one team go up 3-1, or you have a situation where things get tied 2-2. Depending on what it is going in. But last night, big important win for the Bruins as they try now to close out the Maple Leafs Saturday night at the Garden. Big win. Sneaky big win, as Scott Tolak would say.
Called it.
You called it. You called it. And Tuukka Rask, I think, is the story from that game. As pretty as those last two goals were, and as great as it was for Krug to get the Bruins on the board 28 seconds in last night, I think Tuukka Rask is the story from that game.
I think it's everything, too. The critical, the moment that it was, the days off, and to find out that your best two-way player is not going to be on the ice. He was a scratch in warm-ups, and Bergeron not available. He had to do that last night. And it felt like Toronto was on the freaking power play the entire game. It really did. I'm screaming, clear the damn puck. And tweeting it out, clear the thing. And everybody stepped up, even the young kids. But again, it's Marchand, Krejci, the back and forth, Pasternak to Marchand. What a pretty goal that was. You need the luck early, too. And I think they got that luck with Krug's goal. If they didn't have that goal, I think that game could have ended up 2-0 right away, quick. In a weird way, that goal gave them confidence early. Like, whoa, okay, got a little breathing room here. You had no breathing room prior to that. That team was coming out firing.
Here's the update on Patrice Bergeron, who was held out of last night's game. He was on the ice skating by himself today at Warrior, Bruins practice facility here in Brighton. According to one of our sources on the ground, looked a little bit slow out there on the ice. Didn't look to be going at full speed. May skate tomorrow. Again, the update from the team and from the head coach, Bruce Cassidy, saying it's still upper body. He was asked if it had just happened or if it was a lingering injury. He shrugged it off. Didn't really want to give an answer on that front, but said Bergeron may play tomorrow night. So he has not yet been ruled out for Game 5, which would indicate that a day-to-day status is not inaccurate, that they are not BSing anybody on this. And if you go back and watch the hit that he took in Game 3, some people have speculated that it could be a head injury. I don't believe it is. I believe it's something to do with chest, ribs, something of that nature, and that the day-to-day status is real, and that it's not going to be a long wait. So we'll wait and see. We'll see what happens tomorrow. I think last night kind of sums up what this year has been for this team, that they've never stopped fighting. They've got incredible grit, incredible determination. Bergeron goes out. It's announced 20 minutes before the game. I don't know how far out before the game the team knew or Bergeron knew. He may have known all day yesterday. The team may have known all day yesterday.
Little gamesmanship.
But they were ready to play despite that being the case, despite them not having Patrice Bergeron on the ice. It didn't matter. Bruins brought it last night, and their goalie rose to the occasion last night as well. And that's why they have a 3-1 lead. And boy, were the some of those goals just pretty, pretty goals last night.
High-end goals.
Just high-end.
Art.
Elite.
Works of art.
Elite talent type of goals.
It's like you sit here and you hear Hardy refer to Brad Marchand as an elite goal scorer. You sit there and you still give him that crazy look. Like, what are you talking about?
He is.
You do not, forget the early days.
And David Krejci, as much as I...
He brought it last night.
I rip on David Krejci being overpaid and David Krejci... At the end of his contract, going to be a problem and all that. David Krejci always brings it come playoff time, and he brought it last
night. How good was Char, too, when you know, when Anderson covered up a couple and just still getting in there and poking him and just keeping it going, you know, with a one goal lead when it was tied. And just Char was extra tough last night. Everybody elevated with Bergeron being out. That's what you got to do.
617-779-0985. We're also taking your thoughts and remembrances of Gil Santos, who passed away yesterday, and we've been paying tribute in our own way today here on Zolak and Bertrand. We've got Tina and Saugus. Tina.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Hi, good. Tina.
Can I share a Gil Santos moment with you?
Sure.
We have been at the Hall of Fame for one of those speaker series. It might have been the one you did with Zoe.
I remember seeing Mike, you there. Yep.
With Mike Reese and stuff. We kind of lingered around afterwards. And we ended up talking to Gil's son, which was kind of ironic. So we go downstairs to leave, and who's at the ticket booth but Gil? And so I walked over. I said, honey, that's Gil Santos. He's like, nah. So I went over. I said, Mr. Santos, would you mind having your picture taken with my husband and myself? He goes, only on one condition. You have to call me Gil. Call me Mr. Santos. I feel too old. So I kind of giggled. And he walked over and he said, well, you have to wear this. So he handed me his Super Bowl ring because he had it on. And so we posed for a picture with him. I have it up on Twitter now. I have it on Facebook. But it was so ironic that we were talking to his son just minutes before that. And it just, as a kid growing up as a Patriot fan, in my house, we always had the radio on instead of the TV.
Yeah, and I think that's true for most people, right? I mean,
yeah,
Gil been doing it a long time. And again, I said this earlier. I'll say it again. It's the only guy ever that I've ever thought you've got to hear the call of the radio, even if you weren't listening to the radio. Where if you had watched on TV, how did it sound on the radio? Yeah, what did Gil do? Right? I have a friend who texted me today after I had said that, and he said he was in L.A. for the NHL All-Star Game in 2002, which was the same weekend as the Patriots being in the Super Bowl in New Orleans. He says, so while I was in L.A., watched the Super Bowl, experienced the Patriots winning the first Super Bowl, excited, enjoyed it, took the red eye back home, and when he landed here in Boston, this is someone that has worked in radio, called his friend who worked at WBZ and said, can you cue up the call and play it over the phone for me so that it would become official?
Oh, yeah.
Got a call.
That's pretty cool.
Say, can you do me a favor? I just got back to town. Can you do me a favor and play the call?
Can you?
Yeah, play that for me. That's I didn't have access to that last night because I was on the West Coast.
Yeah, but his ability, too, to pick out the big things and go back to him when we would have dead space at the end of the game or third quarter.
How about fourth and two?
What, you want to get to fourth and two now?
Yes, let's get to fourth and two. We'll do it. Jim wanted to play this. Jim went back and dug in the archives today. We were talking about Gil's ability to tell the story of the game and the meaning of what was happening in the game and not just calling it in a vacuum. And that applied during the fourth and two decision in Indianapolis for the Patriots. We will play that for you so you know what we're talking about after this.
Zolak and Bertrand on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Zoe and Bertrand.
All righty, fourth down and two for the Patriots at their own 28. The ball game hanging in the balance. And Falk at his to the right of Brady in the shotgun. Now Falk goes into the right side slot. Fourth down and two for the Patriots at their own 28. Brady takes the snap, looks, fires right. It is caught at the 30-yard line. And I don't think it's enough for a first down. It was caught at the 30-yard line. It is not enough for a first down for Welker, and the Colts have it. First and 10 at the Patriot 30. And now this ball game could be lost.
So that's the start of the fourth and two call in right. Indianapolis.
So he sets it up.
And there's more to this.
He gets Kevin Falk in the slot to the right. And did you hear when the ball was snapped? It's not Brady takes the snap. Brady takes the snap? Like, oh my God, they snapped it. I never thought they were going to snap it. I thought they were trying to draw him off.
All righty, fourth down and two for the Patriots at their own 28. The ball game hanging in the balance. And Falk at his to the right of Brady in the shotgun. Now Falk goes into the right side slot. Fourth down and two for the Patriots at their own 28. Brady takes the snap. Looks, fire.
There is a Brady takes the snap.
Like, are you, and you know freak? What I think? And I was in the car and I go, no.
Do you know what I think when he first realized they may actually go through with it? Was when he says Falk, because he sees Falk go in motion and he thinks, are they actually going to run this play? Are they going to run a play here?
But normally it goes in motion to draw him off. But the problem was, and when Gil knew it was going to be a play, was when he stopped. So Falk went in motion, yeah, but then reset in the slot to the right.
Can we play that part one more time? Yeah. I love this. Can't get enough of this.
All righty, fourth down and two for the Patriots at their own 28. The ball game hanging in the balance. And Falk at his to the right of Brady in the shotgun. Now Falk goes into the right side slot. Fourth down and two for the Patriots at their own 28. Brady takes the snap. Looks.
So it's when he's in the slot. He had stopped in the split. Because you're hearing the call of what's happening after it has already happened.
Yeah.
It's not in real time. And I think maybe people don't fully grasp that sometimes on radio.
What do you mean something?
He will, you will have something described to you that has just happened, as opposed to on TV where they don't describe every detail because you're seeing it. And so that is where he's stopped and he's thinking there's a chance they run this and then they snap it. And there's a legitimate
The second
surprise.
He knew it was game on, the second Falk went stationary.
How about Geno, though? Geno there, too. After they didn't get it. Like, oh, brother.
Oh, no. Oh.
Dag nabbit.
Great googly moogly.
Yeah, that's what it is.
It's despair. But it resonated.
All right. And then this is later on.
Sequence when Indy had the ball. They drove it down the 28 yards. I think they were inside the five.
Right.
Clock running with 108 left to play. Indianapolis taking its time, letting as much time run off the clock. A huge gamble by Bill Belichick, and it has backfired. And the Patriots, who had a 17-point lead at two different spots in this game, are on the verge of losing it. Manning brings him out. Adai is lone running back. First and goal at the Patriot one. Manning calling signal, slot to the far side right. Manning taking his time as well, he should. Manning, handoff to Adai to the left. He's going to be stacked up and stopped short of the goal line. It's going to bring up a second and goal to go for Indianapolis with 25 seconds remaining in the game. Ball marked out of the 2-yard line. It was a loss of a yard. Adai the lone running back behind Manning. Second and goal at the Patriot 2. Manning to throw. And it is caught for a touchdown in the end zone by Reggie Wayne with 13 seconds left.
Now,
I can't believe what I've seen happen here tonight.
Neither do I. I'm absolutely dumbfounded.
This one will be dissected in the newspapers and on the talk shows big time tomorrow and all week long and maybe all season long, because it's going to drop the Patriots to 6-3.
He knew it right away.
Gold.
It's so
great call.
Great
gold.
That in the moment he knew that may go on for an entire season, and it absolutely did.
Years later, all you have to do is say 4th and 2. That's it. And all the stuff that transpired and everything that goes along with it.
Didn't Belichick try and say after the game it was actually 4th and 1?
Yes, he did. He would not admit that it was 4th and 2.
He would not admit it was 4th and 2. Like, it was under 2.
I remember playing that highlight the Saturday after that happened, doing my very successful weekend program, Bertrand and Gasper. And we played that, and I said, oh, he's so right. This is not going anywhere. Gasper's like, what are you talking about? This isn't going to – I go, no, this is going to derail their season.
He knew it affected the season, the outcome, future, everything.
He said, Gil is 100% right. I'm with Gil. I'm right. This is gonna screw this team.
And
he didn't buy it, and I was right, and he was wrong.
Yeah, good. Good.
Take that, Gasper.
And, Zoe, you can speak to this because my gut tells me, as good as that is and how awesome it is, it's like, well, yeah, he made the call on that being an ongoing thing. But it's even tougher to do when you're in the game and everything seems so important and monumental. You know, every big gain, every big loss. And to be able to single out and identify a certain player or a certain series of events as something that's going to have longevity, that's really tough to do in the moment of the game because you're not surrounded by, you know, all the different input from Twitter and other announcers.
Right.
You are the one creating the commentary. So to put yourself out there and for Gil to say at that moment, this is going to be dissected tomorrow, all week long, all months for the rest of the season, you know, that could have, you don't know really in the moment. He did, though.
Yeah.
And that's got to be tough to do when you're sitting in the booth to know.
That's the most complimentary thing I can say about him is his ability to understand and go back where, and you'll hear this with any sports broadcast, whether it's hockey, golf, not golf, hockey, baseball, basketball. End of a game, it's a blowout. Guys start flipping through notes, game notes, stat pages, yearbooks to try and just fill it with stats. Well, if he hits this one, it's going to be, you know, 7 out of the last 10 games. Ooh, he's actually reached extra bases. You're looking to fill with content. Gil didn't have to do that.
Right.
Gil would defer back to, well, tell me again what you think about drive number 2 in the second quarter, because that's the one that stands out to me. That was the humdinger. And it was impeccable. Like right there, he told you. He knew exactly what Boston was going to be buzzing with, not only when they hit foot on, when they touched ground when they came back, but what's going to be said the next day, that week, and potentially for the rest of that year. That tells you the magnitude
called
of those indie games.
Called it.
He called it. No, those indie games. The indie games then are now the Patriot-Pittsburgh games. Like, that call there took me to Pittsburgh. Hey, the impact of Jesse James not completing the catch affected Pittsburgh, affected New England. New England had home field. That's what that does. That's a tough thing to do in that business. It really is.
That was the coach not believing in his defense. And all of a sudden, everybody knew it.
Gil told you the truth, no matter
everybody knew it.
And then 2 years later, we found out for sure when the documentary came out.
Yep. But those guys on that team knew it. Those guys who played on that defense knew right then and there, this guy doesn't believe he can do the job.
Yep.
And he wasn't wrong.
I'll never forget Brady heading.
But you can make sure that those guys will not give you their all when you go with a move like that.
Right. I remember Brady after the third down, slowly start to take the chin strap off and start walking towards the sideline. And then I forget who it was that told him to go back. We're going for it. And Tom snaps the chin strap up, and he looks back, then gets in home. Then, you sure we're doing this? Like, Brady was stunned by it. Hey,
and then he didn't want to talk. And Bill
rolling the dice.
Bill,
but
what game was it where Bill's telling Brady, I just can't get this team to play the way
that was Saints.
It was the Saints game a couple of weeks later.
I think it was week 11. The indie game was week 9.
Was that Colson and Meacham running down the seams?
I believe, and I'll double check, that Saints game was 2 weeks later.
It was an ass whipping.
And they dropped back-to-back games. It was 2 weeks later in New Orleans. They dropped back-to-back games at New Orleans, at Miami.
That game was over in the first quarter.
They'd lost 3 out of 4. And that doesn't happen very often here. Losing 3 out of 4 games that late in the year. Not in September. That
losing
was
3 out of 4 followed by the snow gate that happened shortly after that.
Sean Springs. Oh my God! They had
November. That's November, December. They had dropped 3 out of 4. It did. It really was not good for that season.
Like George Jetson, I'm gonna get my hovercraft and get here.
The dark years. The dark years in the Belichick Brady era. You know, back when Brady didn't show up for OTAs. Oh wait, he's doing that again. 90 seconds, no commercials. Hardy has our headlines. I want to mention the Red Sox, and I will do that coming up right after this.